Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 51. I'm proud and honored to have Stuart Kemp on today. Hey, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing well. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Hopefully everybody's awake now and listening.
Yes. Man, it's been nice to be able to get some time to have you on. And really miss you and your wife. Man, some of the highlights of Cauliflower Alley was seeing you guys. And one of my biggest moments from last time was I just happened to be walking down the hall, and there was Kathy, and we seen each other one-on-one. So that was pretty cool. It was always special to see you guys.
Yeah, you know, and it's the last time we got to see her, too. It was just a month later that she passed away from cancer.
Yeah, you know, so anyway, you know, life goes on. It's an honor, you know. I'm glad to be alive. I'm sure you are, you know.
I guess.
So, hey, what, it's the first-timer question, what got you into the crazy world of professional wrestling?
Well, geez, it's kind of a convoluted story. It all started, I've been a fan for many, many, many years. You know, I like the independent scene of being able to be your own person and your own skin and that sort of thing. And it happened that one time a radio talk show had moved over from a radio station CJOR in Vancouver, Canada, from AM 600 to CKNW Radio 980. With Nightline BC, and they had a weekend slot Saturday and Sunday, and they decided they would incorporate sports into it. So they called it Sports Nightline BC. And there was a guy that was hosting the show, Jim Goddard, and back a few months before, he was supposed to have had a guest or two from Stampede Wrestling. And they didn't show up. You know, he was burying the show, and this guy that I've never even heard of before. And I called up Jim. I said, Jim, I said, I don't know who you were talking to. I said, but I don't know who this guy is, but he's not involved with Stampede Wrestling. Is, you know, I can get your contacts if you're interested. And he was like, well, I'll think about it. And, you know, a month or so later, I called again. I said, well, what do you think? And he said, well, he says, all right, give me the numbers and we'll see if it pans out. So a week or so later, I called him and I said, well, how'd it go? He said, it was wonderful. He says, the numbers all panned out. Fantastic. Looking forward to having you if you want to make it to the show. I said, I'd be honored. You know, I hadn't, you know, thought about going myself just as a listener. But he invited me on as a guest. And originally we were supposed to have Bruce Hart and Honky Tonk Man on the show, but Honky Tonk couldn't make it, so they ended up subbing Tom McGee. And so it was Bruce Hart and Tom McGee and myself at midnight till 2 in the morning on CKNW Radio, which was a province-wide talk show on sports. And so we had the opportunity to be able to see, have people from Vancouver all the way up to Terrace, BC, and so on that were included. And then from there, I was interested in becoming an announcer. And, you know, Bruce Hart had talked to me about that. And he said, well, you know, we're using Waylon, obviously, in Calgary. You know, if you want to look at some of the other dates, you know, maybe, you know, if you're there, come on in. And it happened that I was in Vancouver at a show. And the following evening, the announcer that was supposed to be there couldn't make it. And there was a guy named Terry Fetter, who was the road agent for the shows there, said to me, would you like to announce for the shows? And I said, I'd love it. And so I made my debut as an announcer on April 24th, 1986 in Mission, BC.
Nice. What a blessing. Yes, and wrestling was definitely a better thing with you in it, you know, and hopefully that you haven't seen your last days of wrestling.
Well, I'm probably retired now because of the strokes. I'm not able to do what I want to do. But, you know, I've had the opportunities a couple times. I've been invited to come to a couple places to show them what old school wrestling is supposed to be. And that means the art. A lot of people forget about the art. You know, they watch the TV and that sort of thing, and they see all these fancy dancy moves. But the reality is that if it wasn't for the bases, things like headlocks and arm locks and arm bars and so on and so forth, it never would have led to the other moves that they do. And so as a result, you know, I teach a lot of that, if they're interested, of course, you know, the style of what wrestling's supposed to be, learning how to be able to theatrically make something for your opponents and so on. And as a result, I think a lot of them take away from what it is that I can offer them, really a basis for what they can do later on when they do all these flippity-flippity things and so on.
Okay, right on. And then now my next this segment here is called Heroes. Tell the fans,
sure,
who were some of your heroes growing up in ordinary life?
Oh boy, you know it varied from sport to sport. I mean, you know, in hockey, obviously, you know, we were looking at guys like Bobby Orr and Mike Bossy and so on. You know, I'd sort of gotten into the Wayne Gretzky a little bit, but wasn't a really big fan of his because I thought a lot of times he hung around the goal too much. So, you know, in hockey, I really liked Lanny McDonald, the big mustache. You know, he was a great person. You know, obviously for boxing, you know, everybody was Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. You know, for wrestling, it varied. You know, it wasn't until I really started reading the magazines that I started really appreciating, quote unquote, the heroes of our business. Locally, I mean, obviously, I cheered more for the bad guys. You know, I was fans of Duke Myers and Bad News Allen, you know, which, you know, were all the Calgary thing, and Tim Flowers in Vancouver, Michelle Starr, and in, you know, Winnipeg, it was like The Natural and so on. You know, I really enjoyed them. You know, and then worldwide, you know, you obviously hear about guys like Abdullah the Butcher. Even a fan favorite like Dusty Rhodes, you know, was a good guy to watch, you know, but it varied from sport to sport. And obviously for each one, each offered something different.
Yes. Okay. Now, what about an ordinary life?
Well, you know, there really weren't a lot of heroes per se. I mean, I think a lot of it, you know, was, In my own world of enjoyment, you know, of going to, you know, the shows and that sort of thing, I really enjoyed them. There weren't really a lot of guys that I looked up to in outside everyday life. It just, you know, I guess I really kind of enjoyed the what we call, I don't like to use the word, but, you know, fantasy world, I guess. You know, I enjoyed being able to just sort of sink in there and enjoy those personalities.
Okay, and then who's your heroes in music?
Oh boy, musically, I mean, you know, I grew up a fan of a lot of the old school classic rock stuff. So I mean, I was a fan of the Doors and Jimi Hendrix and so on. later in life, I mean, I was a big Steve Miller fan and so on. Music-wise, it varied. You know, some days I was, you know, into classic music or classical music, classic rock. You know, Marty Robbins was a good one. Gordon Lightfoot, you know, was a good one. Obviously, Happy Candidate for everybody. And Jim Croce. You know, I liked the ballads of music. I liked to be able to have a story. And I think that's the reason why wrestling worked so well for me, was because I liked guys like Marty Robbins and Jim Croce who could tell a story in their music, and Gordon Lightfoot was another one. You could sort of, you didn't have to even really be there. You could just sort of visualize what was happening through their music.
Yeah, and God bless his soul also. Him and Tina Turner recently passing.
Yeah. Yeah, Tina was another one that she would tell a story, you know. After Ike, you know, and her split, it was she was very much a storyteller.
And she hit the top of the world many times.
And it was because of that. I mean, you know, if you're telling a story, I think a lot of people can assimilate with what's going on, and they become much more in tune with what you've got to sell. I mean, you know, people like Madonna and so on, you know, obviously they're flashy stuff, but Tina Turner was one that lasted for ages because she was always reinventing herself, telling the story and getting people to listen to it, you know.
And telling the story that she lived, yes, compared to Madonna, just like you said, it's flashy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you play sports in high school and growing up?
Well, when I was a young kid, I was born originally with a very, very mild case of cerebral palsy, which meant that I had to go in for surgery to lengthen the tendons in my legs. So I wasn't able to run like some of the other kids were. And so a lot of things I did sports-wise, you know, growing up, were to be able to learn how to run again and so on. So I got involved with soccer and I got involved with baseball for a small period of time. Sort of got out of a lot of that. Did some wrestling in high school, you know, amateur wrestling and that sort of thing. And I think that's sort of also what led itself to a better career in professional wrestling as well.
For sure. And then what else is your self-defense background besides amateur and pro wrestling?
Not much about anything else. I looked at some of the other martial arts. I never got into them. And obviously, you know, with my situation these days, it's not really much of a thing I can do. But, you know, I really enjoyed a lot of the people that were able to do their things like judo and karate and so on, that were able to assimilate both of those into our business in such a way that it wasn't just karate and it wasn't just jujitsu and so on. They actually were able to incorporate a lot of those things into a professional style, and so people really could get into it. You know, there was guys like Steve Blackman, who was a martial artist. Bad News Allen was a judo medalist in the Montreal Olympics, and so as a result, you know, they were able to use those martial arts in their thing. I wasn't able to do that myself.
Well, yeah, that's awesome when you can do that. Yes. Okay, what are some of the most memorable matches you've seen?
Oh boy, you know, I think one of the most, you know, there's lots of memorable matches. Obviously, the thing that really got into me was December of 1983 with Bad News Allen and Archie Goldie and, quote-unquote, his son, Jeff Goldie, who is Tom Dalton out of the South, wrestling against Sidney Two Rivers, Davey Boy Smith, and Bret Hart out of Calgary. They don't show a lot of what really transpired on the net these days. Unfortunately, they don't show you the whole storyline. But Bad News turned on Archie in that match, hogtied him to the post, and then with aid of a couple of others, power drove Jeff Goldie from the ring apron down to the floor, and Jeff was stretched out, and it was what turned Archie face into to the fans. And so I went to my first live show, you know, a couple of weeks later, and Bad News Allen and Archie were on top. And they ended up making an impromptu lumberjack match, and it And it really got me hooked on what wrestling was supposed to be and how it was. And I think that's the reason why I enjoy it so much. It was just because they captivated you and they enveloped you into really wanting to watch what they had to sell. Those were classic matches. Obviously, you know, people that could see some of the matches on video of Dynamite Kid versus Tiger Mask in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, they were well ahead of their time in terms of what they were able to do. I mean, obviously nowadays, I mean, it'd be, you know, small potatoes, but at that time, they created some of the most incredible arrays of matches of all time. And him and Tatsu Fujinami in New York in Madison Square Garden with Dynamite in 1979 proved why it was that Dynamite was definitely one of the pinnacles of our business. Maybe not liked by a lot of people, but definitely was an impressive talent, you know, for sure. You know, and I think that's why a lot of people really got into the business, was because they enjoyed what these guys could come up with.
Yeah, and I was blessed to get to see him in his rookie years down there training in the Pacific Northwest with Portland, big time wrestling in Portland. Yeah, and then I'll never forget, I'm going down there to get tickets to the Tacoma Bicentennial Pavilion, and they got like a 5x7 picture of Dynamite Kid jumping off the top rope with the fist drop. That's their advertisement for the show, is his picture.
You know, exactly. Exactly. And that, you know, that was the thing. You didn't need 3,000 pictures on a poster. You just needed one, and that was the thing that would sell tickets.
Yep, and he was in the Clan, right?
Yes. And then, of course, you know, that big turn, you know, with Buddy Rose and Rip Oliver. Actually, I got to see Rip Oliver and Buddy Rose wrestle each other in August of 84 when Stampede Wrestling was just getting ready to sell to Vince. They had Buddy and Rip Oliver, you know, in a match in Vancouver. And it was great to watch, you know, the guys from Portland to be able to do what they did, as well as our Calgary boys. It was, you know, on that, I think on the top of the show was Davey Boy Smith versus Masked Superstar. Phenomenal match to watch. And I'm trying to remember who Brett wrestled on that show. But yeah, I mean, all those matches were memorable for sure. I mean, I there's just so many of them that were really top notch. And of course, you know, whenever you went, whether it was the Portland Sports Arena, you know, Vancouver for the Quota Fairgrounds, or Calgary for the Pavilion, you knew that you were going to get a hell of a night whenever you went. And obviously, they would make sure that their live shows, whenever they brought them to towns in Tacoma or Seattle or Vancouver or Edmonton or whatever else, you get to see the stars, and you would see phenomenal matches regardless of what venue you were at.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was only blessed to get to see them in Tacoma and Seattle. But
hey,
that's
worthy of itself, though.
Well, and then I got to see Sandy Barrs wrestling in Lakewood. He brought Snooker versus Colonel DeBeers. That was amazing at Lake High School. Yeah, yeah. And then
I got to manage Colonel DeBeers one time. Was it 92? I think it was in Vancouver or Cloverdale. Pardon me. I was the manager for Colonel DeBeers when he wrestled Mighty Quinn. And of course, you know, they were pushing the apartheid thing. So Colonel DeBeers, you know, wrestling a black man was really a big thing for a lot of them. And Colonel was tremendous, absolutely tremendous.
Oh, yes, goodness, yes. Okay, and I'm sure the fans would love to hear and love to look up some of your most memorable matches you've been involved with.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if this one is ever on video. It was really a memorable match of mine. It was a match that I had with Ladies' Choice in Nanaimo, British Columbia.
Oh, man.
Ladies' Choice had been a villain forever on the shows, and that night he was going to be the fan favorite. Well, you know, LC, you know, came into Nanaimo. Obviously, Nanaimo was one of those places where they really loved the bad guys, and so they were going to love me no matter what. And LC's like, this isn't going to work. And I said, just wait. I said, let me go out first, and I guarantee you this will work. And so I went out first, and of course, they're cheering all the bad guys and everything. And so I found three teenage girls out in the front row of the audience. I said, oh, this will be perfect, you know. So, of course, you know, I put it on its thick, you know, with it on the best body you've ever seen, best abs in business, blah, 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 blah. And then I end off with, I'm your only choice. And then the music hits, and that's when LC comes out, you know. And, of course, you know, the back fans are booing him because he's a bad guy. But the girls in the very front love this long blonde-haired guy with tanned and white teeth and so on and so forth. And they start cheering. Well, all of a sudden, the tide turned, and all of a sudden, everybody was starting to cheer Lady's Choice. And so we went through the match. You know, he ended up finishing me off with a frog splash. And we get to the back. He says, what the F is going on? You know, what just happened out there? I said, that's what professional wrestling is. You can work on the fly.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you got to do. And that's it, you know, and we got them to love Lady's Choice for that one night. You know, another match that I had that was a real favorite of mine was the Honky Tonk Man. You know, I wrestled him in Redmond, Washington, Redmond, Oregon, at a fairgrounds, pardon me. And, you know, Honky had his penchant for not wanting to wrestle Doink the Clown characters because they usually got makeup on his jumpsuits and that sort of thing. He just hated that. So it happened that Jerry Gregg had a mask that I wore, which looked like Doink the Clown. So I did that. And I remember we're out in the matches and that sort of thing. And Honky, of course, is supposed to be the bad guy. And everybody loved him. He's the clown. So it was like, okay. So Honky's like, you know, kill the clown. And he was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, fine. So, Honky asked me, what do you want to do? I said, hey, you know, whatever you want to do. You know, I know what the finish is going to be. No big deal. So we get out in the ring, and he throws me out on the floor. He says, you want to take a post? I said, sure, what the hell? So he fires me off from one post to another. I fly off probably about 6-8 feet into the crash of the guardrails, right? And I just end up in a crumpled heap. And Honky's looking at me. He's just flabbergasted. And he comes over to me. He says, screw, man, are you okay? You know, and I'm fine. He says, hell, man, you want to do it again? So, you know, I threw up in the other post. And Honky just loved that. You know, he just loved the fact that, you know, he was able to get what he needed out of it. And he looked like $1 million. You know, it was wonderful. I enjoyed every minute of the shows. I just wish that we'd be able to do more of them. But, you know, such as it is, right?
Yeah. Okay, and then you've done a lot of different roles and different characters in wrestling. Tell the fans your different roles and your different characters you've done.
Well, I started off originally, as I said, as the announcer for Stampede Wrestling, and I went to West Coast Championship Wrestling, and I started doing the announcing there. And it was at that time they had lost both Jonathan Sayers and Mauro Ranallo to various ventures. I think Jonathan went back to Winnipeg, and Mauro was getting into the UFC. So at that point, they needed a manager. And so I became manager Handsome Johnny Flash, and managed Michelle Starr, Vern Siebert, and the Basher. And we were known as the House of Lords. You know, I did this full British accent, and it was wonderful. And obviously, you know, the manager ends up having to wrestle at some point, and that I did. I wrestled alongside of Basher against Tim Flowers and his girlfriend at that time, Wendy. And, you know, Flowers finished me off with a pile driver, and I was carried out in a stretcher with a neck brace on and so on and so forth. But, you know, we were doing a lot of road shows and that sort of thing, and obviously, you know, trying to keep expenses down. So, you know, Michelle Starr and I were trading off between who would run the front door and sell merchandise and wrestle. So, you know, obviously you don't want the ticket taker being the guy that sells your tickets and that sort of thing. So, you know, wrestling on the show. So I donned the mask, and the first time I was known as Silverhawk, and then I went and wrestled under the name of Skull Crusher, and it was at a Vancouver exhibition show in 96 that I was going to be wrestling Ole Olsen. And Ole said, you know, he says, you know, I don't want to work a mask guy. You know, you sort of remind me a lot of Bob Brown when I wrestled him in the Maritimes. And so he says, maybe Bulldog Bob Brown Jr. would be good. And so I went out, you know, that night, and I sung some songs, believe it or not, of I can't remember what it was, but I was doing like some a cappella stuff for singing and like James Brown kind of things. And I'd have some guy who would throw a shroud over me and walk me out to the ring and so on and so forth. I mean, just really, really, it's silly. And but Ole and I got over well with those matches. And I remember wrestling a tag match, and on the last night that we were there at the VIEX, and there was a fiddle player by the name of Asher McIsaac that was playing at the amphitheater that was right next to us. And I called him out. I told him, I said, get your fiddle playing ass out here. I said, let me put the boots to you. Of course, he never showed up, but I mean, it was just it was my way of doing things. But I think we had about 4,000 people there that were watching the shows there. And so I really enjoyed that. And, you know, Wrestlers Bulldog Bob Brown Jr., another big show that I did was the Rock Fest up in Vanderhoof. And I think we wrestled in front of about 5,000 or 6,000 there. That we were on the underbill with Creedence Clearwater Revisited and a couple of the other groups that were playing there. Red Rider, I think, was supposed to be there. So I was looking forward to being part of that. And I'm very lucky that I got a chance to do that.
Okay, wow. Nice. Okay, and who are some of your favorite? Who are some of your favorite people to work?
Well, obviously, Honky and Ladies' Choice were my favorites because they were like the exact opposites of what I did. But I wrestled everybody. I mean, I wrestled a women's match one time. You know, wrestled against a lady, and it was a great night there. Wrestled a long time against Little Nasty Boy, a midget wrestler who has been featured on Jerry Springer and around the world as well. But he predominantly wrestled in the Pacific Northwest, and he and I had a great battle going on for many, many years, many different venues and so on. And it was always a different match that we would have, in any different venue, because we would wrestle the same venue and several times over. We always had to change the matches a lot, and so the end result would always be unique, whenever we did it. And I know it was a lot of fun for both of us because we got to do what it is that made us best. Nasty obviously getting over with the crowd a lot, and me being the hated villain, was always the exact thing that they wanted to see, and that's what we gave them. And those were really my favorites. I mean, I wrestled some of the other ones. They were all favorites of mine because they all, at one time or another, lent themselves into what we needed to do in those particular towns. Those three particularly were my favorites just because there were just so many guys that could do, what those three could do. And that's why I love those ones the most.
Okay. And what was it like working with Tim Flowers?
It was always, interesting with Tim Flowers. Tim was one of those sorts of guys. You just didn't know what you were going to get. One night, he had a mood situation. Other nights, he didn't. And, I was lucky in the first time that I wrestled him with Basher. He took care of me. I mean, he could have hurt me real bad, but he didn't. And then we wrestled a singles match in Chase, BC during the Stanley Cup playoffs. Vancouver was in the Stanley Cup at that time, so the crowds were really thin. Flowers was in a bit of a mood then, but he took care of me, when I wrestled him. That was good. We sort of had a bit of a falling apart, several years later, and sort of patched things up in 2017, I guess it was, when he came to see Delta Dawn being bestowed the award for being into the All-Star Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2017. And next year following that, unfortunately because of the strokes, I wasn't able to attend, but Tim Flowers was inducted to the ASW Hall of Fame in 2018 as well. And, he's got a great wealth of knowledge to offer the young crew. It's just a lot of the times I think that, there's problems that you could have either way. And because of that, maybe you don't listen to what's out there. But I think there's a lot of knowledge that can be given to the up-and-comers of how to protect yourself, how to, what to look for, what not to look for, et cetera, and be able to, make it, in something in this business.
And then can you give us a Tim Flowers story?
Oh boy, there's lots of those. You know, some of them aren't too good. But as I said, the one match that I had with him in Chase BC in '94 was phenomenal. I mean, I was a little bit petrified. I mean, here you got a guy who's been in the business, you know, dozen or so years, and then some, has had a chance to go to the World Wrestling Federation and so on and so forth. Has been around the world and here's this podunk kid who's had maybe a couple matches under his belt and could easily, I've seen, him swallow up guys on TV, just destroy them. He wasn't like that with me at all. I had an opportunity to be able to get my stuff in and create it in such a way. So those matches, I think, lent themselves to sort of a Heckle and Jekyll side of what he could do. Some days you get the Heckle and some days you get the Jekyll. You never knew which you were going to get.
Okay, and yes, I've been on shows with Tim Flowers, and I got a Tim Flowers story. So I'm a rookie, man. I'm in like my second or third show, something like that. It's in Anacortes at the casino. Debashi got this show up there. So of course he's got Tim Flowers on the show, and he brings three Canadian guys, Rockford and Basher. Okay.
Yep.
And there's this battle. Well, first I get squashed by Debashi as the mass marauder, so that was all right. And then Hank Miller, my future manager, hits me with a golf club. Then there's a battle royal. Okay. So I have the pleasure of wrestling Basher in Rockford. Okay. Basher is effing trying to kill me. He's shooting on me. He keeps laying on my face with his fat belly. Trying to fucking smother me, you know what I mean? I'm like, fucking asshole. I'm fucking kicking out and fucking pissed off, And he's laughing and keep trying to do it, I guess it could have been worse.
Your introduction to the business, kid,
And then anyway, in the locker room, it's like an intermission or something, right? And the scene is, I came in with a styrofoam box of teriyaki, and I had it sitting down for a period of time or something, and I think I left the room to go to the bathroom or something. I came back in.
That's never a good thing.
Yes, and then all of a sudden that's when it dawned on me, and then it was sort of revealed, hey, you never leave nothing laying around. And so it's Tim, Debashi, me, and Rockford. And then, first it's me, Debashi, and Tim. And as soon as, I walked into the circle that you never need to leave nothing around. Oh, yeah, fuck. And I'm, starving. And I was, went to grab my box. And then all of a sudden, Tim Flowers seen that was Rockford's drink and that he had his back turned. He instantly picked up Rockford's drink, and you should know what happened. He instantly dropped his trunks and stuck his whole dick in Rockford's drink as we all just busted up laughing. Right about then, Rockford turned his back as he perfectly pulled it out and set it down before he even realized. And then so Rockford walks into the circle, perfectly grabs the cup, takes a drink, and we bust up again. I'm sort of pissed. This guy's doing this to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That's nothing,
The ribs were a big thing, One of the funny ribs was we were in Duncan at Eagles or at Elks Hall, and Blaze Choice thought he would play a rib on a few of the boys there. So, he brought out these brownies, and, it was late in the afternoon, and the ring had been set up and that sort of thing. And so, a few of the boys, we're going to go get some dinner. But they were hungry, and they saw these freshly baked brownies. Of course, Moondog Manson, you know, scarfs down about four or five of the damn things. And I was a little bit hungry, you know, but I nibbled on it, and I thought, geez, something's wrong here. You know, it's just, you know, something's wrong. So I only had a little bit, thank God, because Elsie had laced those things with X-Lax. And so when Manson's match is up, he's like, oh, Jesus, you know, he was in trouble. The X-Lax was always the big thing.
Who are some of your
pissing somebody's drink, you know.
Yeah. Who are some of your toughest opponents?
Oh, boy. You know, I was fortunate. I never had a lot of tough ones. I would say my toughest one was probably Blake Krewell. And I'll tell you why. Here's a 6'8" monster, 325 pounds, just muscled beyond belief, originally trained by Ole Olsen. And I don't think he really knew what his own strength was. And I remember we were doing a show for Jerry Gray. We did a show at Lincoln City. And they didn't have, you know, a wrestling ring at that time. They used the boxing ring that they had stored at Lincoln City. Well, that thing was already stuffed as cement as it was. But then you had to wrestle Blake Krewell. And I didn't know originally there was a boxing ring. I thought it was a wrestling ring. I, you know, usually go before the shows. I check all the rings out just to see, you know, the construction, see if there's holes in them and that sort of thing. I always do that check. Well, I didn't. And so we get out to the matches. Blake and I are the first match, and I'm wrestling as Doink the Clown. And, you know, I thought, okay, we'll put over Blake's strength. So, you know, I'll climb up to the apron, you know, second rope, and I'll start throwing some punches in him, and he'll know some, and he'll just throw me off, you know, and I'll land back first, you know, in the mat, no problem, okay? And then whatever from there. So, you know, boom, 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 start hitting him, and he pushes me off, and I fly, and I land thud on this boxing ring, which is no padding, no nothing, or anything else. And it's like, oh, my freaking God, that hurt, you know, and you know, took all the wind out of me and everything else. And I still, you know, and that was the beginning of the match. And I still had, you know, 7-8 more minutes to go, you know, before this match was over. And, of course, at the end of the match, then I got to deal with Ken Stillwell and Blake Krewell, and I can't remember somebody else beating the crap out of me. And they were stiffish as hell, you know. It was just brutal. You know, another one that I had, I wouldn't say the toughest match because he definitely was a sweetheart, but it was just the conditions. I wrestled the Trash Man, Randy Taylor, at a show in Nanaimo, B.C. At that time, I was wrestling under the name of Skull Crusher. So I had the mask, black tights, black everything. I mean, you know, and we're wrestling what is known as the Nanaimo to Vancouver bathtub races, which is a thing I don't know if they do anymore, but they used to have to wrestle these modified bathtubs from Nanaimo, B.C., across from Vancouver Island to Vancouver in English Bay. And I can't remember. I think they had to paddle them or something like that. It was some bizarre thing. Anyway, so Randy Taylor and I are wrestling in the middle of this street for this match that is in the downtown Nanaimo. Well, it was the hottest day of the year. We're wrestling on a black canvas. I'm wrestling all in black. You can imagine what's going on here. And Randy and I are looking out and going, who's going to bump in that crap out there? You know, just, you know, I was the, you know, as the guy said, you know, Randy, I'll do it, you know, for you guys. So, you know, I took the bump in there and, oh my God, it felt like I was on fire. You know, I just, it was the worst feeling I could have had in my life. Fortunately, we were able to get through the match, and I don't think Randy got any more than second-degree burns out of the matches. And thankfully, I was wearing outfit, so I didn't get, you know, burned. But it was harder than hell, though. It was just, you know, I remember coming back and dusting myself with water and that sort of thing, because it was just, I was literally, like, steaming. You know, those were fun times, though. I mean, you know, you look back at them and you go, yeah, that was fun times. Then may not have been. But now, looking back on it, it's fun times because, you know, you got to be alongside some of the guys that you liked working with, and they took care of you, and you know, you created your excitement in the matches and so on. It was a lot of fun.
Definitely, you know. And I do have some questions from what is – he wants to be called a mystery caller, okay?
Oh, dear.
He goes, have you – you might ask Stuart if he ever considered transgender surgery to get a transgender cruiserweight title.
No.
Okay.
Wasn't even talked and about. Transgender wasn't even talked about back then.
Goodness. And then the same mystery caller has two more questions. He goes, or if he plans on going to the Greg Gutfeld show just to see, just to wrestle Tyrus.
I tried to watch Gutfeld show and I just can't do it. So
that's
the answer
true.
Would be no.
He tries to be funny and, you know, it's like it doesn't last very long trying to watch him. Yes.
Okay. I tried to watch any,
now,
of the, you know, any of the guys on there, and it was that fun.
Goodness. Now, there was one more he had. He goes, they can't, he can't, we were going to call the guy, but he won't let us because he's working. He can't, I'm on the job, but you could tell him a mystery caller asks when he predicts artificial intelligence will make its debut in your region.
Geez, AI basically, well, it's already happened in Japan, hasn't it? You know, where guys are wrestling dolls or themselves. I know, you know, I did a match one time, you know, for the boys. We were having some fun. I was booking for Tito Carrion at the time. We were doing the shows out in Hillsboro at his boxing gym. And, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, we were trying to, you know, stall for some time, you know, waiting for the guys, fans to show up and so on and so forth. So, I ended up wrestling myself, and it was a great match. You know, we had a lot of fun with it, and a lot of the guys really liked it because, you know, it was like, you know, you didn't have to have an opponent to be able to make it, you know, mean something. Nowadays, I mean, you see these things on camera, you know, where guys are wrestling plastic blow-up dolls and broom handles and everything else. You know, behind the scenes is one thing, you know, out in front of the crowd is another, because that takes away our mystique of what we were all about.
Okay, yeah. All right, right now is a special time in my show that I just started a few weeks back here.
Oh, goody, I get to participate in new.
You do, you know, and what it is, it's called, we're going to try to call somebody who cares, okay? And then
okay. Now
it's to me to find somebody in this big old world out here who would actually care, okay? So let's give it a shot and see how I can do. Okay. I'm a little new at this. It takes a second. Okay. Bear with me. 253. We won't be giving out the number.
Okay. Definitely not. Wait a minute, why is my phone ringing?
now check this out. This guy, I'm sure you guys have been around the block a few times. I don't think I'm going out on a limb.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
We're doing great here at the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast. It's nice to have you on. You're on our segment.
Well, nice to be with you.
We want to see if we got somebody who cares. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just monitoring Money in the Bank here to see what's been going on there and some nice surprises and getting ready for the big NWP show coming up next weekend, our 10th anniversary.
Yes, we love to promote them. We've had JD on. We'd love to have all the guys from there on, so you can let them know. And then also, you've been around the block with Stuart before, right?
Oh, a little bit here and there. Stuart's I've enjoyed Stuart's company at Cauliflower Alley, We've talked a number of things about, you know, his work up in Canada and so forth. But We've never actually hooked up on a show before, but you know, we were both writers for magazines and so forth, and so we've had some comparable careers. We've both been ring announcers and so forth.
And what about you, Stuart? What's your recollection of Ken?
Oh boy, about that same. You know, we're both talking the same language, I think. You know.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, that's
nice.
True.
You know,
that's true. We have similar backgrounds. So, you know, Stuart has actually been in the ring, and that's the one thing I haven't done. But I have done a number of things. But Stuart's always been a great guy to me. We've always been able to, you know, share our opinions and share our stories. It's always a nice time when I got to hook up with him at CAC, and we would, you know, trade war stories. That's always a fun evening.
Yes, definitely. All right, yes, I'm looking forward to getting you and Tanya on, too, so I'll get back with you here soon so we can get a date for you.
Oh, that would be great. We'd love that.
You got to ask him, though. Does he care?
I'm sorry, one more time. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
Somebody said
everybody's talking at once.
Oh, okay,
you know, I think in that retrospect, I think we both really care, because we both really care about the boys that have gone before us in the business, and that's why we're both proud members of Cauliflower Alley Club, and I believe you are too, Coach, and
yeah,
that's one of the things that's near and dear to Stuart's heart, and so is mine.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to plug or promote?
No, I just want to invite everybody out. It's next Saturday night, July 8th, at the Key Peninsula Civic Center. Bell time is 7 o'clock. It's the 10th anniversary of Northwest Pro, and it will feature a ladder match for the Northwest, or check that, the Washington State title, between JD Mason, the current title holder, and Christian, who is out of Texas, Christian Wild, and he's a good upcoming young guy. They've been going at it pretty good here, and this should be the ultimate match between these two for the Washington State title, and they're going to do it in a ladder match. So tickets are extremely well-priced, 15 for ringside, 10 for general admission. And if you've ever been to the Civic Center there in Vaughan, Washington, which is just outside of Purdy over the bridge here from Tacoma, It's a great venue to go see a show at, and we guarantee you guys will not be disappointed with the great action we're going to have that night. We're also bringing in Project West is going to be there, who is a very high rated independent wrestler out of Vegas. Plus we'll have all our regulars, Lumberjack and so forth, and your good buddy sign guy there is going to be there to referee most of the matches that night. So it should be a fun night. And please, if you guys are in the area here in the Tacoma, Seattle, you know, Key Peninsula area, come on out and see us. You won't be disappointed.
Right on. Thanks, Ken. We appreciate you, brother.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much. And Stuart, I hope you're doing well, and God bless you.
And hopefully we'll see you at CAC in August.
I don't know if I'll be able to make it this year, unfortunately. Had some unforeseen money issues that I had to take care of. But, you know, we'll try and get down there as soon as possible for another show.
Keep me in touch.
All right, Ken. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
See ya. All right, there he is, Ken Hamlin. Yep. All right, well,
he
yes,
cares.
Of course. He does care, yes. Thank you, yes. And then, okay,
yeah.
Now let me see, since I know you care, what are your suggestions for people wanting to get into the business?
Well, obviously you have a good background. You know, the biggest thing is people seem to think that riches are to be made in the business. They can be, but the thing is it's like anything else. It's few and far between. So you got to have a background, you know, whether it's a job that you love that you can handle. Health insurance is important because, you know, there are potential injuries, not that you hope that they happen, but they do happen. And, you know, medical bills are very expensive these days. It doesn't matter, you know, limited, if you visit a hospital or something like that, it's expensive. So make sure that you have proper medical insurance because as an independent contractor, you don't have that, you know, going into all these shows. The other thing is that get your proper training. You know, people that look at all these sites out there, oh, I can do it on the cheap, you know, whatever else. That necessarily, you know, cheap doesn't necessarily mean the best. Most expensive doesn't mean the best. It's knowing, you know, what they can provide you, what they can give you, and what your expectations are. If you're expecting, you know, everything and under the sun, it's just not going to happen. And if you're not expecting anything, well, that may happen either too. But you've got to be able to, learn and be able to want to learn, you know, of all those things. There's a lot of guys that just they seem to think that they're going to be the next heavyweight champion of the world. They're going to be the next superstar, or whatever else. Well, again, you know, it's a very small pond of people that will actually get in there. And a very large lake of those that want to get in there. So you've got to understand that that's not going to happen right away. It may not happen for years. It may not happen at all. And you've got to be prepared for that. You've got to have fun. I mean, most importantly, you've got to be able to enjoy the rigors of the travel. As you know, I mean, there are nights that you're going to travel 200 to 400 miles or better. And that's going to happen. You're going to... you know, have probably about four guys in a car because, you know, you want to save on the expenses. You're not going to be able to get a hotel room because it's too expensive. So maybe you're camping out in a campsite or you're, laying on a mat, you know, at the ring or something like that. I mean, there's a variety of different things that could happen. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of friendships, and that's one of the reasons why, like CAC, National Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, they have the Gathering in North Carolina, and a couple of other ones that you can go to just to learn about some of the experiences of what the guys are going through, what they've gone through, and what to look forward to. I don't want to short sell it because I don't want people to think, oh, God, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to do anything. It really depends on what you want. You know, maybe you aspire to become the next world guy, or you aspire to just be the top ranked guy locally, whatever the case may be, that's fine. But, going into it, what it is that you want to do, I think is going to make you successful. Get your proper background, whether it be training, amateur-wise, professional-wise, whatever else, but learn. Learn the basics. Learn how to protect yourself and others. Because sometimes there may be moves that require both of you to protect each other, you know, and sometimes you need to protect yourself. And sometimes that be, you know, physically from an attack to just protecting yourself from a bad landing, a lot of things like that. Learn all your proper techniques before you even think about it. And for God's sake, don't try anything crazy on a live show unless you've practice it to the nth degree, outside of that. You know, if you've gone to a gym and you've practiced it once and all of a sudden you're going to do this major thing on a show, don't. Because it may be your last match and maybe your last show, and then what? What have you got to live for? You know, personally, that I think would be the best advice for a lot of the people.
Yes, for sure. And then what schools do you have that you might want to recommend?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things. I think that each area offers their different techniques. It just really depends on what you aspire to and where you live and what it is that you want to become. And realistically, let's not take some guy that's 400 pounds, 5 foot two, is thinking he's going to be the next Hulk Hogan, for God's sake. Do your due diligence. There are schools opening and closing all the time, unfortunately. Some of it just because of finances, or they're getting tired of doing it, or they've done it forever and a day, and so they move on to something else. And there are other schools that are coming in that may not have the credentials. Learn your due diligence. Go and learn about your schools. Don't just suddenly plunk down your money and figure that you're going to become the next star. Learn from other people. Talk to other people about the school. Was it something that you really enjoyed doing? Was it something you really got a lot out of? And the teachers, did you go in there strictly for the name? Like, let's say, I'm just going to throw a name out there. Say Ricky Morton. Were you trained by him specifically, or were you being trained by three or four guys that were understudies? That sort of thing is really important. So a guy may own a wrestling school but doesn't necessarily train. Well, is that really, the best bang for your buck? And obviously, where do you want to go? I mean, we've had guys like Mick Foley, for example, that traveled from Long Island, New York to Boston, Massachusetts to train with Killer Kowalski, packing sit-up rings and tearing down. People seem to think that setting up a ring or setting up the chairs and that sort of thing is beneath them. I know of shows that we've been on, guys like Dr. Luther, for God's sake, FMW superstar, now a star in AEW and so on, was out there setting up chairs. Steve Corino was out there setting up the ring, for God's sake. And these were on local shows. Why do they do it? Because they understand the industry of what we do. It's got to be a team effort. Everybody's got to pitch in. Everybody's got to make their mark, whether it's sitting at the merchandise tables, putting up the chairs, setting up the ring, putting up the dressing room, getting it organized, giving some ideas, whatever the case may be. Everybody's got to do something to make it successful. And, you are not going to be the WWE guy that's going to basically just be on your own and hide away and nobody talks to you and everything else. You've got to be a family member. You've got to be able to, like Ken was saying, you've got to work with the team. You've got to, work with everybody to become functional. You've done it, and it doesn't matter how long you've been in this business, whether you've been in here 1 year or 20 years. You're all a team, so you're not beneath setting up a ring or tearing down a chair or setting up a truck or setting up a dressing or whatever else. You're not beneath that, When you make the pinnacle, if you ever get to AEW or WWE or something like that, you might take a night off here and there. But, the guys, they just don't do that. And so an independent scene, you can't do that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And then this next segment is called Favorites. What I'm sure Sign Guy and the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is.
I don't drink coffee. I told him before, I drink tea, and I like Earl Grey English breakfast and Irish breakfast myself. Orange Pekoe is not bad because it's always the standard to go to. But I hate it after, if they don't want to replace the tea bag after a couple of cups, because it's like kind of yucky.
Okay. Are you there?
But on coffee-wise, I mean, dark roast smells good.
Okay. Now I got a question from QT Vokes, the founder of Turnbuckle Turmoil. He says, how long do you think transgender influencer and Bud Light spokesperson Dylan McIlvenny could last in a match with the Great Khali?
Oh, boy. If they can run fast, a long time. Because Khali's not that fast. It just depends. What kind of match was it? Punjabi prison match? Regular match? You just don't know.
Here it is. Here's the match. Then he goes, well done, sir. They need to be asked, especially the student loan forgiveness Hell in a Cell match with hopefully Judge Clarence Thomas as the ref.
And Joe Biden is the timekeeper, right?
I know. Yeah. So now he's
and
in
the house. And you'll have Johnny collecting the gear.
Yeah, okay. So he might not last that long in a cage.
Well, you know, we've seen it with Lex Luger and Bruiser Brody, right? A minute? You know,
yeah.
And Lex Luger had to climb out of the cage and leave. So, you know, who knows?
Yep, okay. Now back to the favorites, okay.
Yep. What's your favorite concerts you've seen? You know, one of the best concerts I saw, and believe it or not, it's hard to think it's that long ago, but it was 1994 with Pat Benatar and I've forgotten the guy's name. That's Steve Miller. And
okay,
I saw that at the Pacific Coliseum, and they played for 4 hours. It started at 7, it ended at 11, and it was an incredible night of concert. Now, my first concert I went to see was a group out of Canada called FM, which was Martin Biller, Cameron Hawkins, and Nash the Slash, who were three band members who created this sort of a space rock kind of thing. I saw them at the New York Theater on Commercial Street in Vancouver, and saw them a couple years later when they replaced Martin Biller. I can't remember who it was on drums, and Adam Critchley as a guitarist. And they sort of went to a more mainstream rock, which sort of disbanded the group, and that was about 1987. Those were fun shows to watch. I just saw a recent show that was phenomenal, and I don't know the name of it, that people would go, what the hell? But it was a group called Garbage. And they played back in the 90s. They were a well-known group in the 90s. They played with Noel Gallagher, who was half of Oasis. Brought a group called The Flying Birds. And there was a group called Metric that opened up for them. We saw them at Clark County Amphitheater. And it was a phenomenal show. It was, it started about 8 o'clock or so and ended about 11. And it was a great little show. I'm going to go see a show tonight. I've got free tickets to go see Nita Strauss, who is woman.
Man, she's going
to see her tonight at the Hawthorne Theater.
All right, damn. I want to go see her in Seattle on Monday night, but that's a work night for me, damn it.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I'll
let me know how it is. I'm a big fan.
It's funny. I was listening to Sirius XFM radio the other day, and Nita with Dorothy, the song called Victorious came on the air just at that time. I was thinking of the show, and so I'm looking forward to this show big time tonight.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to get a full book report, please.
I shall.
Okay, and then now, what, dude? You should be voted one of the top sports franchises alone. You are probably rated as one of the top fans of many sports franchises because you're part of booster clubs and all that. What are your favorite sports teams?
Yeah, I was the president of the Portland Winterhawks Booster Club for 15 years, and that was in Portland, Oregon, the Portland Winterhawks. And, I was 3 years additionally on the board, so a total of 18 years total. And I finally resigned this last year just because it was just getting to be too much. And obviously with my wife passing away, it was really tough for me to do it all on my own. But obviously I do like hockey. Obviously, I'm rooting for, granted, we're talking Seattle and starting with the Kraken, but I really like the Vegas Golden Knights because former Winter Hawk Aiden Hill won a Stanley Cup ring. So I have to give him the props for that. Really nice guy, believe it or not. Aiden is a fantastic guy to deal with. If you're wanting baseball, obviously, Canadian, we always, cheered for the Montreal Expos and the, now somewhere else. But we always enjoyed the Toronto Blue Jays. But I always liked, old school. So, our old Vancouver Canadiens baseball, was always enjoyable to watch because, Nat Bailey Park is a phenomenal place to be. If you've never been, you've got to go. You get to see all the sights. You're at Queen Elizabeth Park area, and you get to see Grouse Mountain in the background. It's a phenomenal ballpark.
Yeah.
It's a great place to go. Went this last week to was it Emeralds game, Eugene Emeralds in Eugene, Oregon, because they were doing a wrestling show afterwards for POW Wrestling, and it's a nice little ballpark. It's on the same field area there as Reser Stadium, so you know that was a great little place to go to, great little ballpark, great little venue to go to. You know, they're really having
and that
a
looks
lot
like
of
quite,
minor league
quite,
parks
that
I really enjoy.
Quite the show, also.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, POW was phenomenal. You know, just, you know, I recommend them, DOA. You know, the Northwest has really blossomed, you know, with shows. You know, it's not like when I first came on the scene, you know, the only show that really came into town was ECCW out of Canada, you know,
which was
Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling, where we ran into shows, you know, in Bellingham and to Nooksack, and we stayed out in the Seattle-Tacoma area because at that time PWF was running its major shows there, so we didn't want to compete with them. But we did shows in Port Angeles and Shelton, in Vancouver, Longview, and Wenatchee, and you know, just great areas to go to. And that was the one thing that I will say about the independent wrestling scene: you get to see a lot of areas that you probably would never have seen in your lifetime, and you know, even though they could be long travel, you could be on the road 8-10 hours or so, there's some stories that you can create. Like Matt Bohr and I would create some great stories when we traveled, you know, to the West Coast when we did a show in Terrace after doing a show in Prince George, about 8 hours away. We had a great little time in the car. You know, just those are stories that we'll never forget. And they are
goodness.
The pinnacle of what makes wrestling wrestling. And I think that, you know, if you put a dollar sign on wrestling, you know, you can never put a price on the friendships you can gain, the relationships you can gain, and so many other things that you can gain from being on the independent scene, whether it be on the West Coast in Tacoma or Seattle or on the East Coast in New York or Florida. It really doesn't matter. You know, it just you get the camaraderie, you get to see the stars, you get to create the camaraderie that just doesn't exist in any other sport.
Yes, and for sure, Matt was a special, unique person. You know, not only was he cool and nice and awesome, he was funny and he was smart and he was intellectual.
Yes.
And then give us a little tidbit of that car ride you're telling us about.
All right, so it's, you know, I'm putting together a book right now. I'm hoping next year. I've been procrastinating this thing forever. Mike McCurdy out of Texas and I are working on this thing right now. We're about 40 or 45 pages in. I just got the go-ahead to use some of the articles that were in the Tri-City News when I was working at a hotel desk during a fire in 1990. But the Matt Bourne story, so... this is definitely not suitable for work. So if you're at work, please don't listen, or listen to it later. So we're traveling from Prince George to Terrace in a little tiny Toyota Tercel, myself, Matt Bourne, and Tony Kazina. And, Tony said he would offer to drive, you know, part way because, you know, obviously I'd driven a long distance. I'd driven from Vancouver to PG, my own. And we'd stopped on the way to Prince George in this little town called Sima, British Columbia, which is outside of Quesnel. And we stocked up on some supplies for the trip to Prince George and then on and beyond. And so we stopped in this little fishing town store that was there. And, you know, we picked up some supplies here and there. Tony picked up some of his good eating stuff, you know, the jerky and hard-boiled eggs and so on. Matt Bourne went for the cans of oysters. Yeah. You know, I picked up a couple of chips and that sort of thing. Anyway, we did the show. Matt Bourne wrestled Steve Rizzano on the show. Steve was definitely, you know, at his game that night. He jumped off the rungs of this climbing apparatus, probably about 6 feet down, crashed onto the floor. I mean, you know, no wonder he was wheelchair bound for so long. But anyway, getting back to the Matt story. So Matt and I then take off with Tony to Terrace, BC, because we got to do this mall appearance at 8 in the morning. So we thought we'd get into town, throw our bags in the hotel room, grab a shower, whatever else, and then go. And we thought we'd have a little time between that and the mole appearance, you know, to grab a couple hours of sleep. So anyway, we're traveling along, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, from Prince George to Terrace, B.C. Now, for those who've not been up north, you know, even in April and that sort of thing, it can get down into the below freezing temperatures. You know, we were probably, you know, Fahrenheit-wise, we were probably about 20 to 22 degrees. It was cold outside. And so we're traveling along, and, you know, Tony, after about 45 minutes, you know, of driving from Prince George, suddenly says he's tired. And I'm going, Jesus Christ, I've already driven, you know, 10 hours. Jeez, you know, I don't want to drive anymore, but okay, fine. So Tony and I, you know, switched off driving, and I drove a little ways until I just couldn't handle it anymore. And then finally Tony took over, and then he went on for about an hour or so, and I took over. And so Matt was sitting in the passenger seat, and, you know, to stay awake, Matt was thinking of things to keep alive and awake. So he was thinking of Dustyisms. Now, Dustyisms are you know, where Dusty Rhodes would be out there talking about his various things and in his cool accent thing and just making poems as they go along, right? So Matt and I were just sort of coming up with these really stupid Dustyisms as we were traveling along the road. And we're probably, I would say, probably about 45 minutes or so outside of Smithers, B.C., which is the junction of, outside of Kitwaga, which is the junction to heading up to Hyder, Alaska. It's the most easterly point of Alaska before you go west to Terrace and Prince Rupert. So it's probably about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, and Matt says, I got to take a shit. I said, Matt, I said, you can't do that. I said, there's no places open right now. We're on Highway 16. There's nothing open. You know, our next town is like 2 hours away for Terrace. So we're probably maybe about 15 minutes, you know, past that point. And Matt says, I got to go. I said, Matt, I said, I don't know where you're going to stop at. He says, I look up ahead. I can see this Petro-Can gas station, you know, pulling there. It's not open, Matt. I said, it's dark outside. You know, where are you going to go? He says, you know, I'll go somewhere. He says, just pull in here. So I pull into the gas station. He pulls off a bunch of paper towels out of the dispenser for washing your window and goes around the back. He says, if I'm not on in 10 minutes, you know, send the troops after me because the bear's probably gotten me. So we're probably about 10 minutes later. Both Tony and I are talking a little bit. We're going, you know, we haven't seen Matt. I wonder, you know, where the hell he's at. So we're about ready to take off and go and find him. When Matt comes running from behind the station, and he's waving his hands and that sort of thing, gets in the car and says, Tony, man, you got to go and see this thing, man. It's the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. I'm going, what are you talking about? He says, go around the back of the station, man. He says, you can't believe this. Okay, fine. So Tony and I take the car. We're going around the back of the Petro-Can gas station. Now, bear in mind, this is a Native Indian gas station, and, you know, nothing against Native Indians, but a lot of them don't keep the back of the store very clean. It's not, you know, there's shit everywhere. Yeah. There's, you know, there's crates of this, scans, everything else. I mean, they don't throw anything out, you know. So anyway, I go to the back. I said, Matt, I don't see anything at all. Matt says, turn your high beams on. He says, look over there. We're looking by the back door, and we see this big pile of paper towels. I'm going, Matt, what the hell is that? He says, take a look. And we're looking, we're going there. Oh, my God, it's a foot-long tall thing of shit. Matt's just shit
out.
A foot-long tall monument, right? And we're going, oh, my God, Matt, what are you doing? He says, man, that's a monument. I said, it's something. I said, fuck, we're getting out of here right now before this goes any further. We drove off to Terrace. We did the show in Terrace that night, okay? So the next day, we leave from Terrace. We're going to go back to Vancouver, but we're going to probably stop partway. We'll stop at 100 Mile House along the way, which is probably about, I'd say about 10 hours or so driving. So anyway, Matt has this funny notion that he wants to stop at Kitwaga at that Petro-Can gas station to see if that thing is still there. So we drive around the back of the gas station. Yep, it's still there. Not only is it there, but it's frozen over. It is ice crystal shit, you know. And we're going, oh, my God, you know. And Matt's going, he's just laughing up a storm as we leave the station. We head to my 100-mile house. We stay there that night. Michelle Starr, we give him a call to tell him where we're at, and we tell him I tell him about this story. Anyway, they the following April, they decide they would go and do some shows up in Dees Lake, which is if you take, you know, from that Kitwanga exit there, you head up north, you end up at Dees Lake, Stewart, and then Hyder, Alaska, okay? So,
wow.
You know, I said to them, you know, I can't believe this, but let's just see. So I am told that it was still there. Six
Damn.
Months later, that thing was still there and had calcified, okay?
Oh, geez, I
so
bet.
I'm going,
goodness.
Oh, not only is this thing frozen over, but it's calcified now. And it was the thing that Matt
wow.
just loved. He loved this big monument. You know,
I
and
know.
That's Matt for you, though. That Matt was
exactly,
one of those sorts
yeah.
of guys that would well, you know, I never was there to tell the story or see the story, but Matt would tell me this story about Elton Owen, you know, doing the shows at the Portland Sports Arena. And he had this penchant for guys that he wanted to shoot all the time. And, you know, I don't
yeah,
know
yeah.
why Elton had this big thing of wanting guys to shoot, but whatever, you know. And Chris Youngblood used to tell me about this, too, you know. He says, yeah, Elton Owen would come in the building and go, you want to shoot? You know, and in that accent thing. And so, like, okay, fine. So two guys would take a bump on it because they're like 25 extra bucks, and they'd do a work shoot, right? Elton thought it was legit, but these guys, you know, knew how to work, right? So they create this thing. Well, they were at a show one time, and Elton Owen was in the back, you know, and anybody who knows Elton Owen knew that he used to puff on these big, huge stogies, okay? And that was his big thing, you know, was his stogies, right? Well, he left a couple of them behind in the dressing room. Big mistake. Matt says, oh, I'm going to have some fun with this. He takes one
oh,
of those stogies
goodness.
And shoves it right up his rectum, okay?
Oh,
and
shit.
Puts it nicely back on the thing there so that, you know, that when Elton comes in there, he won't know. Well, Elton goes
oh,
and grabs
goodness.
The thing that Matt shoved up there, right? And lights it up there. Smoke's on. He says, man, this thing tastes like shit. The whole dressing just burst out laughing because it was so
Jeez.
Funny. But that's just the kind of person that Matt Bourne was. You know, he would rip people, but he would rip them in such a way never to hurt anybody, ever. You hear of guys that would
yeah.
do ribs that would hurt people, right? Matt always
oh,
did
yeah.
things that were funny. And that's why Doink the Clown existed so much. I mean, when he went in and did Doink the Clown, Vince McMahon, you know, wanted the Doink character. And Matt said one of the best people that ever did a clown was Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson,
okay.
when he did The Shining,
yeah,
here
yeah.
is Johnny, you know, kind
Batman.
Of thing. That's what Matt Bourne patterned Doink the Clown after. And that's why
okay.
he was such
yeah, nice.
The heinous clown. Yeah. And
okay,
so
right
nobody could ever compete. Nobody could ever compete with that. I mean, Steve Kern, Steve Lombardi, you know, Ray Apollo, all tried to be doinks. Nobody could ever compete with Matt. Matt just had the face. He had he knew when to put the humor in there. He knew how to create that atmosphere. And that's the reason why he was such a great person to listen to for advice, you know. You know, a sad story I'll tell you about Matt, you know, quickly, because I know you're running out of time. But one of the things that I remember Matt was here at the house one time during his rehab state. And people don't talk about that. The vice thing for Dark Side of the Ring, I'm kind of disappointed in because they didn't talk about the fact that Matt really tried to kick a lot of the habits. And he kicked a lot of the drug stuff, was on some of the alcohol things. And that was one of the things that we had here was no booze. And that's why Matt really liked
okay.
it here, because there was no temptations at all. But I remember him sitting on the couch one day watching TV, and he's looking over at me on the computer, and he's saying, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm looking at a site here, wrestlers who died before age 40. He says, man, he says, can you print that out? So I printed it out, and I bring it over to him, and he says, can you bring me a pen or a pencil? And he's sitting there, and he's going through all these people, checking off names and so on and so forth. And he's like, come over here. He says, you know what? I worked probably about 85% of these people. and all of them are dead before I am. He says, what kind of silliness is that? And I thought,
wow, really?
Now that's the side of Matt that people never saw, was the very human nature side. You know, he was very humanistic, you know, and it was very sad that he ended up going back to Texas. You know, he left here at the first week of June, and he would pass away a couple of weeks later, you know, in Texas with a large heart. You know, I'm sure, you know, the years of abusing his body and so on took its toll on him, similar to guys like Buddy Rose and similar to, you know, some of the other guys that have passed in our area that have passed at such a young age. But you figure, you know, Kathy was 56. You know, she never did anything, of course, but she was 56. Buddy Rose was 56, and Matt was 55. You know, that middle age group, that's just a horrible age to think of, you know.
Yeah, I was blessed to be on one of his last shows, the Sandy Barr Show. Man, and I got his autograph and got to sit next to him in the locker room. But
what
a tragedy. And what's that?
What a wealth of knowledge, though. I mean, anytime you'd ask him things, he wasn't one of those sorts of people that would hide things from you. He would tell you as it is. He wouldn't sugarcoat a lot of things. He would tell you as it is. So, I mean, if you really wanted the straight truth, you'd ask him because he would tell you. And that, I think, is a refreshing thing that you know, we don't have in our business. You know, a lot of guys kayfabe stuff. They want to try and hide stuff from people of realities. You know, Matt, you know, told us it like it was. You know, he would admit to his stuff. You know, he knew he'd done wrong in his life and tried very hard to make it worthwhile. One of the good things is that, you know, he's interned next to Nona and his dad, which is phenomenal because I think that really is a good thing for him because one of the last times that he saw his dad was, you know, was just before his dad passed. And I won't get into that story because it's kind of personal, but seeing Matt, you know, very human there, with his dad was something that a lot of people just don't understand. I think that part they miss. And so, you know, I think that's a one thing. If you have a chance to go to any of these gatherings or CAC or National Wrestling Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, or whatever, you know, meet up with some of your old crew. This is a great, you know, NWP will be another one. You know, you can meet up with some of the old crew there. You know, the opportunity to see these guys, talk to these guys, glean the knowledge from these guys, listen to, you know, shows like yourself that do, you know, great due diligence on being able to provide some of us old guys with an opportunity to say a few words and say to the masses on things is really important because that part of the art, I think, doesn't need to be lost and shouldn't be lost. And it won't be lost because, you know, we have, you know, things like that continue to this day.
Yes, definitely. Exactly. So, yeah, and I'm proud and honored to be a co-host with Sign Guy on Turnbuckle Turmoil. And so let's see, when we wrap it up here, what do you got coming up and how do people get a hold of you?
Well, I'd love for everybody to check out. I mean, I've got some spaces left on my Facebook. Obviously, they can find me under my legitimate name of Stuart Kemp. They can also email me at bulldogbobbrownjr1@yahoo.com. See me at CAC. I run the cribbage there every year. Have been since 2018 when I suffered my first stroke, which is strange. 8 days later, I would have my second one and hospitalized for 6 weeks more after that. And great people like Christy Fox and Eve LaRue came to my house and made it friendly enough to be able to come home and you know, enjoy being able to be enjoying your life and that sort of thing. Up until that point, I mean, I was laying in a bed, peeing in a box, and that sort of thing. I really didn't like, you know, where things were headed. So, you know, being able to have the support from everybody has been tremendous. But, you know, I love to see people's responses. I love to read the emails. I don't get a chance all the time to email everybody back. You know, I do try. See me at CAC if you're there in Vegas. We're there August 28th through 30th. I'll be there a couple of days earlier for Kathy's ashes. We're spreading them there in Las Vegas. And then hopefully I'll get a chance to go to National Wrestling Hall of Fame in July of 2024. There's some great talent that are going to be there. If you're having a chance to go out to Waterloo, Iowa, they've got Tommy Rich there, J.J. Dillon, among others. Just a countless number of people. They've got a countless number of people going to CAC this year. Nasty Boys are supposed to be there. Sergeant Slaughter, a great hand, is always there every year. J.J. Dillon's there. I mean, you don't want to miss it. I mean, if you have a chance to go to CAC, there's 8,000 members, probably about 800 or so go to the dinners, and then I would say 1,000 or so go to the Nostalgia Room. It's an opportunity to hobnob with some of your favorites and see what wrestling was like and is like today and yesteryear.
Yes, for sure. All right, Stuart, thank you for your time, brother. It's an honor and a privilege, and, man, I wish you all the luck in the world. And if there's anything else, let us know.
Well, I thank you, and thank you to the audience that listened today. I know that I rambled on. I apologize for that. I hope that some of the stories were heartening to you and some of the insights were heartening to you and some of the fun times were heartening to you. If you have a chance, each week when Coach Mike Jones puts out the podcast, you definitely got to listen because there's, you never know who's going to be on there, what sort of questions are going to be asked or anything else, and you can learn an awful lot from keeping old school alive.
Thank you so much, brother. Man, we appreciate it. Yes. Yes, and next week we have Michelle Starr is going to debut on my show. Yes. You're going to have to, we might have
what
to
time
give
is he coming
a,
on?
I'm not sure yet, but we might have to make a special call to somebody who cares and see how that goes.
Well, here's the thing. Just an FYI, this isn't really knowledge to everybody, although it's going to be knowledge to many. We're doing a meet and greet with a lot of the famous stars of ECCW on Saturday the 8th in Surrey. So around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you're doing a late podcast, I'll be fine. If not, then I'll be on my way up to Canada at that time to see everybody. I know that we've got quite a few people that are going to come and see us there, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody that have been our crew for many, many years. They mean an awful lot to me, and hopefully we'll be Michelle Starr will give you some insights that you've never heard before.
Okay, yes, definitely. Yes, and I've been honored to wrestle him before. And then on July 15th, I'll be having Jim Valley back. We tried to have him on a couple weeks ago, but we had technical problems. July 22nd, I got Bruiser Joe. I guess now he goes by Nevada Jack or something.
Because I don't think him and the other Bruiser are wrestling together as a team anymore. So,
I'm listening.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just saying that Bruiser Joe is another one of those old school guys. He's going to be one of those guys that's going to give you a lot of the insight. So you're going to have three of them in a row. You're going to have Michelle Starr, Jim Valley, another great old school lover. Does some of the new school, but really likes the old school. Bruiser Joe is another one that's going to give you a lot of the old school stuff. So, I mean, that's the reason why you got to partake and listen to these podcasts, because you get to hear a lot of the old school of what we used to do.
Exactly. And then on the 29th, they have a controversial show with Ron Von Hess. He's got to get some stuff
that
off
is controversial.
Chest. Yes, I got to give it to him because, man, he's had me on his show so many times, and he's pumped me up so many times on his shows and gave me so many interviews. It's like I have to give him an interview. And he's like saying this.
It'll be interesting to see what he has
interview.
To say, considering all the things
that
go on.
Exactly. And then working on some other people for August. And you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. And then
Also, don't forget to check out Turnbuckle Turmoil, 1 o'clock Sundays and 3 o'clock on Fridays. And then we have a special concert coming up, The Never Were, who wrote my ring song, Coach Mike Jones' walk-on song by Joe Love and The Never Were. They're having a concert here in Washington at Ravensville. That's up by Black Diamond, and that's going to be July 15th at 2 o'clock, so I can't wait for that. And, yep, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Stuart. We appreciate everyone, and here's The Never Were.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, or diagnose. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones. Everybody say coach, coach. Everybody say coach, Mike.